The elderly man and his sons pulled out their pregnant sister and her one-year-old daughter from under the rubble with their bare hands. The family fled to school for shelter, where his daughter bled for hours before an ambulance was able to make its way to them. Despite their traumatic experience, Jaber, who suffers from heart problems and diabetes, made the decision to return to their destroyed home in Boraj, in central Gaza, because he felt that all other alternatives lacked dignity. He said, "This is my house. How can I let go of it? I literally built it with my hands, stone by stone. I look at it 20 times a day, and I struggle with the fact that I cannot even rebuild or fix anything." He said, in a voice full of sorrow and anger, "I cry every night. I cannot even sleep anymore. If I fall asleep and wake up for any reason, I cannot fall back asleep. I'm living a very primitive life amid the rubble, but I would rather do that, leave my house and evacuate from one place to another like chess pieces. And what for? What have I and my family done? I have realized that no one cares because we are in Gaza. We have turned into videos for people to watch. Why is it so hard to give us our very basic rights that are granted to us by all international laws? I cannot understand the world." The displacement of almost 2 million people in Gaza have brought back memories of the Nakba, or catastrophe, in 1948, when 750,000 Palestinians were forcibly displaced from their homes by Zionist militias to make way for the newly created regime of Israel. Palestinians in Gaza are living today what their grandparents lived over 70 years ago, and the fear of never being able to return is at the heart of their concern. Jaber said, "If the house is destroyed, the land is still there, and it is mine. I would rather die here than live another Nakba like my family did before me. I'm not asking for help to leave or evacuate. I am asking for an end to this war and help in rebuilding my house and rebuilding Gaza. All I really want is peace. I want to see my children get married, have jobs, and look forward to their future with their own children."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim, Islamati. Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet, praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, lovely friends from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
Well, this is Asma and
I am Beta here. There are times that I sit in the kitchen of my house and I struggle with my mother. I talk about the world. I talk about my friends. I don't know whether you do this or not. Whenever she is cooking, it's the best opportunity for me to stand there and talk to her and even sometimes fight with her about all the values and about all the things that we share with each other. And most of the time, these kind of fights and these kind of arguments that we have, and it's a big pleasure for me to be at those situations.
And for her, make sure.
Yeah, are the times that she will tell me something really bitter. The time that we came to the conclusions about life, about the truth of life in this world. And one of the things that she always tell me is that there are things in your life that you cannot change, you cannot understand.
Exactly.
You cannot even feel and touch, but happens. Okay,
yeah,
and the patience that you have
like,
to have.
That is the conversation of all the mothers.
Yeah, exactly.
Like my mother as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes when she comes to shake sense into my head, she starts saying that.
Me too.
Try to make sure that you believe in the fact there are some certain things in this life
yeah.
that cannot be changed.
Yeah, and
like whenever I come to tell her that about my fears of death, of losing dear ones, she
yeah.
says, you must keep it into your mind that there is death. Death is inevitable. You have to come to peace with that reality.
Yeah, and sometimes we get to this point that not only death, but life itself is inevitable.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel like, I don't want to go through all these pains and sufferings and obstacles and
yeah.
losing someone and all of those stories. But it's just the way life is. You know, you cannot fight against it. You cannot
yeah.
change the truth behind
it's
the life.
It's the course of nature.
Yeah, it is.
And we have to actually embrace it. And there are not just one but millions
yeah.
of truths that might be so bitter and so hard to believe, but unfortunately they are just the truth of life.
Exactly.
Like the things that we just talked about. Death is one of those realities that is bitter, but we have to believe in it.
Yeah.
And there are some more of these examples, like sometimes failure is a bitter truth.
Yeah. Failure after a lot of trying.
A lot of, yeah. That is the thing that makes it so tragic.
Yeah.
So tragic. Failure, death, betrayal, abandonment. These are some very realistic truth about life.
Sometimes loneliness.
Sometimes loneliness, yeah.
Yeah, it's so difficult to mm-hmm. actually deal with this fact that you don't have anyone out there to help you despite other than your family. And sometimes you feel like you're all alone in this world.
Yeah.
You feel like there is no one out there to talk to you, help you, be mm-hmm. there for you, give you a shelter.
Yeah.
You know?
But there's also another truth which is so sweet and beautiful that makes all those
yeah.
bitterness, those bitter truths to be tolerable. And that is the fact that God is watching it all.
Yeah.
He's watching over us. He's there to help us. He's so close to me as the beating of my heart and as the blood in my veins run as close as they are to me. He is there close to me as well.
The fact that Allah Almighty is watching over us in every aspect of our life both is reassuring because there is someone who created you, who knows you in every part, in every corner of your body, of your soul, of your
exactly,
mind.
Yeah.
And another perspective in this issue is that it's a kind of reminder for you that there is someone there watching you.
Yeah.
And no matter what you do, whether it is bad deeds or good deeds, it is all counted.
So this is just the introduction. This was
yeah.
the opening. Let's go for a short break. And then we come to talk more on this. Welcome back. This is Youth Station. We are talking about
the bitterness of some true facts about life.
Yeah, and we mentioned a lot of examples.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of bitterness out there.
Yeah, and
they are the realities
exactly.
of life.
And the last one that you mentioned was kind of reassuring and beautiful to know that despite the fact that there is so much bitterness in life, there is still something to have hope.
There is this
about.
Huge
yeah.
sweetness in life, which
yeah.
is
Allah
the
Almighty.
Connection to Allah. And Him being there watching over us makes everything go pretty much easier, let's say. Because
yeah.
even Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the battlefield of Karbala, as he was losing his dear ones in the worst way possible, and the departure of all those beloved was so difficult to him. But then He said, it's easy for me to tolerate because I'm sure yeah. that you're watching over me. Because exactly. I'm sure that you're beholding me. And this makes it easier for me to tolerate the situation. And yeah. that's very true, because if we take him as the paradigm,
yeah.
as the one whom is the mirror in which we're going to be reflected, so we have to be like them as well.
For sure. They are our role models. And in this difficult road, we need someone in order to guide us towards the real destination of hereafter. And yeah. another bitter fact about life that always will make me upset is the times that I feel like I'm so much forgetful about everything. This characteristic that as human beings we have to be forgetful, to forget everything, is a blessing and a torture at the same time.
But do we forget, really?
Yeah.
You know, the exams and the things like that, yes, we forget. But the bitter things we never forget. I do believe that our mind has got a mechanism that works against us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it always plays some tricks and games against us. Whenever there is something bitter and so harsh that's always bothering me, it would plague me at any time.
Yeah.
But whenever there are things that I have to keep in mind, like, for example, the textbooks, like the exams that I have, like the appointments that I have, I would forget them.
Yeah.
But I would never forget the bitter and harsh realities that I've faced in my life.
So you're blessed, because most of the people are like, they have this defensive mechanism that even if they don't forget about the bitterness of the memories in the past, they will try to forget it. They will try to ignore it. And
I try,
exactly,
but it's impossible.
Maybe.
Because my efforts are in vain.
Yeah, because trying to forget something is a way to remember it. And another thing is that look at all those mistakes that we make. Look at all those mistakes throughout the history that we have. We have this famous sentence that history repeats itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means that we forget. If mm-hmm. we didn't forget all those lessons.
But then, you know, something just popped into my mind right yeah. now. Why do we have to face all of those bitterness in our life? That's a question, you know?
Yeah, that's a question.
By the way, we know the answer. Because, you know, life is so short and nobody has promised us a wonderland in here. It was not supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
Because it's life. Life is a battlefield, I suppose. Mostly.
It is.
It's more like a battlefield. Like you are in a constant research and pursuit of happiness and prosperity or salvation even.
Yeah.
Sometimes you fail to get whatever of those things that I mentioned, and sometimes you're successful. At the times you are successful, you shouldn't be too happy, because next step might be a failure. And when you're too sad for your failures, you shouldn't be, because, you know, success is just there.
Maybe
in the other corner, because we have a verse in the Holy Book of Quran that that means after all difficulties, there must be a peace, happiness for you that will come. So it's a promise.
Yeah. And another thing is, I call life a field of action. You know, we are here to do things, to go through difficulties. And there is a field for you in order to plant whatever you want in this field. Okay.
Exactly.
And the point is, there is also this beautiful verse of Holy Quran that we made human beings in difficulty.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this is one of the most touching verses of Holy Quran, that you may have this beautiful imagination about life, that it is sweet, it is beautiful, it might be, for example, relaxing, joyful, but it's not always like that. Most of the time,
sometimes wonder who
yeah.
has put this idea into our head that life must be wonderful.
You know, I believe there are
factors. Where does this concept come?
But, you know, we are living in a world full of different information, full of the actually invasion of difficult and false images of life. For example, you see an advertisement, there is a beautiful and perfect mother, a beautiful and perfect children, a happy family, and everything is perfect, the home is perfect, and it will make this background in your brain that to be like that.
Mm-hmm. The ideology that has been imposed into your brain.
Exactly. And it comes from those different invasions that you are in the middle of that soft war. So you have to understand it.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
If parents and education go on this basis that teach your children and teach everybody, each individual, that, okay, life is a beautiful chance for you to flourish yourself, to develop into your better version. But then at the same time, among all these beauties that you have, like family, like attachments, like belonging to a certain city, to a certain family, to a certain religion, like all of these things, among all these beauties, there are some bitter realities. There are some bitternesses out there that you must embrace them as well. Like you must accept that there is a day of sadness after a day of happiness. Like there is a day of happiness after a day of sadness.
You have to go through these difficulties in order to understand the value of those days that you were at ease. And that's another bitterness of life itself.
And we have it even in our narrations. Yeah. You know, without the difficult days, you would never value the happy days you have.
Exactly.
And vice versa. It works the same. I always, now since you're a doctor, you might see more of these.
I'm studying, right?
You're going to see more of these incidents and examples. Like a kind of a sickness comes there and plagues all the people.
Yeah.
And then you can't do anything for them.
No. At the time of COVID-19, actually it proved that you cannot do anything.
See, science cannot change everything, cannot be a solution to everything. Human beings are so proud of whatever they have achieved, but they were just tiny little creatures considered to that tiny, tiny virus.
You know, I believe another bitterness and a reminder, a beautiful reminder that we saw throughout our history was this COVID-19, that because the point that we made a lot of accomplishments and achievements and a lot of development in technology and medicine, we felt like we can go through everything. We are so much powerful and this and that, but it proved us that we were wrong, that it was kind of a reminder for us in order to remember this fact that we're still in need of Allah Almighty. We're still nothing.
No matter how far you go, you are in need of that Almighty. You need that connection. Do not lose it and do not distract yourself by wrong notions that you have science, that science is everything, that technology is improving, you're mastering everything in this universe. No. Still, if the nature wants to be against you, if the nature goes against you, then you are so trivial to fight it back.
And this is only the physical aspect.
Yeah,
about this spiritual part, you have nothing to share. Yeah. You have nothing.
There's a lot to talk about. Yeah. Considering this fact of bitterness of life and the realities that we must embrace. But all in all, the gist is going to be this way, that no matter how much hardness, hardship, difficulties, bitterness we're going to face in this life, the fact that God is over there makes everything pretty much easier.
Yeah. Put all your trust in Allah Almighty. And that's the gist, I believe. And I think this is the end of our episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone. And how about listening to an aphorism from the Messenger of Mercy, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, on how to protect health of society. All my people will be virtuous if two classes of them become virtuous, and will be reprobate if these two classes become reprobate. They are the jurists and the leaders.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
It must be heaven.
Part 4.
May 15th, 1948. The last British ship had not yet faded away when Ben-Gurion announced the establishment of so-called State of Israel in a speech broadcast by the media.
For us, it is the most tragic moment in our history. Will be re-established the old United Nations in the mandatory power of England as a free Jewish commonwealth where all inheritance.
The skirmish began. Arab armies crossed over the borders to reach the battlefield in support of Palestinians. Finally, after a year of conflict on all fronts, they retreated, and contrary to expectations, the ground was prepared for the acceptance of the usurped government in the United Nations. May 15, 1948 became known as Nakba Day. The day when the occupiers finally put their seal on the Holy Land. But the truth of the matter is that Palestine was conquered by Zionist filmmakers for the first time in cinema frames. This documentary is a story of the occupation of Palestine in cinema pictures and the struggle and effort by Palestinian filmmakers to recapture their country through the lens. During these years, Mustafa Abu Ali and Hani Johariya became the most important and influential theorists of Palestinian documentary cinema. They even launched an annual festival of Palestinian films in Lebanon to make the community of Palestinian filmmakers more integrated. All of the movies in the festival focused on the national narrative of Palestine and its struggle against Israel and gave the cinematic struggle a specific direction. When, in the statement of the Palestine Film Foundation, movies were compared with military operations, it was not strange that Hani Johariyeh, the most famous Palestinian filmmaker, became the first martyr of resistance cinema while recording a film. Hani Johariyeh's camera that was stained with blood was placed in the museum like a weapon of a famous fighter, it was clear that cinema had become a part of the battlefield strategy, just like a weapon. In 1982, the Israeli army attacked Lebanon. The main goal of Israel was to destroy the foundations of the quasi-government that the Liberation Organization had built in Lebanon. When Israel besieged West Beirut, the Liberation Organization sent its forces to Tunisia, Yemen, and Algeria. In the midst of battle and the evacuation of troops, a catastrophic event piled pressure on the bad days of Fatah. During the days of Israel's attack on Beirut, the archive of the Palestinian Film Unit, which was compiled by Khadija Abu Ali and was organized after spending many years after it was moved several times, it finally disappeared and no trace of it has ever been found to date. In 1948, when the first Arab-Israeli war broke out, some of the Palestinians who were living in the newly established territory of Israel sought refuge in neighboring countries. But those who stayed established a society that is called the Arabs of 48 or Israeli Arabs. The Arabs who had left in the occupied lands gathered in the city of Nazareth, a place known as the Arab capital of Israel. In the early 80s, when the militant leftist groups were nearing the end of their story and one after the other sat at the negotiating table for peace, a new generation that grew up under occupation woke up and broke its silence. The tough living conditions and the mushrooming Israeli settlements on occupied lands served as reasons for a more active opposition to Israel's rule. Spontaneous popular movements here and there in Palestine gradually turned into a nationwide uprising, which became known as the Intifada. A national uprising in which the new generation of Palestinians, namely the youth born in the camps and occupied territories, formed its main body. The youth who were looking for their national identity amid the uproar of stones, fire, and blood and shouted, "We are Palestinians and this is our land." Men, women, and children took to the streets and sought to drive the Israeli troops out of their cities. Nazareth, in the heart of the occupied territories, suddenly became the biggest and main host of the anti-Israeli Intifada movement, the Achilles heel of Israel. But among the youth in Nazareth, there were those who had new ideas for the struggle, ideas that found their way onto the cinema screens. New filmmakers abandoned the stereotypes of the Palestinian cinema and tried to extract the essence of the Palestinian narrative from the daily lives of Palestinians. The change, which reflected the growing importance of the land as a symbol of Palestinian identity and nationality, was revealed in the works of directors who were born in Nazareth. Hence, cinema and intifada, both of which were identity-seeking in nature, for the first time brought the struggle inside the borders of the occupied lands. How can you make a movie about people and places whose existence is ignored? About the fragility of life under occupation. Michel Khalafi was the first person who had an answer to the question. No one could see a clear vision in front of Khalafi. The burden of the Palestinian cinema was entirely on the shoulders of documentary cinema before that. Fictional cinema, despite scattered efforts, had never been able to be as effective as documentary cinema. The movies had very basic narrative lines in terms of story. The movies often suffered from a slow, inhibiting pace and had a primitive form with superficial characters and simple atmospheres. A cinema that seemed to be filled with the extras that had no story to tell, and the audience could never identify with such movies. It was the scorched earth where Khalafi wanted to plant new seeds. Michel Khalafi, born in 1950 in Nazareth, should be considered the first hero of independent Palestinian cinema. He went to Belgium at the age of 20 and, after studying filmmaking at the Brussels Film School, returned to Nazareth to make his first movie. Khalafi found three financial sponsors, Germany's ZDF channel and two Dutch television channels. The filming, with a low budget, took 45 days. The result was a movie titled Fertile Memory, which made its director a symbol of the resistance of Palestinian cinema. Khalafi did not believe that memory was enough and would prove anything. The foundation of the homeland must be built through one's personal story and in the heart of a solid storytelling. Khalafi presented a new form to portray Palestine in cinema. The Palestinian cinema starts with a movie by Michel Khalafi, which specifically deals with the relationship between man and land. Land as a symbol of Palestinian identity and nationality is the main hero of the movie. The staring of the camera is a staring of the director to reclaim the land, a look at Palestine before occupation. The past also has a strong presence in the present and constantly appears before the eyes of the refugees. The combination of space and time depicts the Palestine before the occupation that is still alive, away from the uproar of the invaders. This vision by Khalafi makes the foundation for the independent and modern cinema of Palestine. All the movies flow in two specific layers. The deadly memory of losing the land and being caught up in everyday life. A cinema that is based on memory, landscape, and the land. With the movie Wedding in Galilee, Michel Khalafi managed to change the conditions for independent Palestinian cinema. Wedding and Galilee won the International Critics Award at the Cannes Film Festival. That is how the story of the oppressed people of Palestine was depicted on the world cinema screens for the first time. Claffey's next movie, Tale of Three Jewels, moved a step ahead in the path of establishing Palestinian resistance cinema, which Claffey had initiated. The characters in his movies spend their daily lives under the shadow of the Israeli army, barbed wires, guard towers, and military rule. What is missing in the lives of these people are the memories and landscapes of Palestine. The characters in the movie come out of the camps and occupied areas to see their land and push the boundaries by moving around. The sea and the beach, the sky and seagulls, the endless groves, villages, and orange orchards, they were reminders of the forgotten images of the land of Palestine. But the cruel reality of occupation, as always, imposes itself on the atmosphere, and the characters abandon passivity and start a rebellion against the imposed boundaries. No matter how promising the new Palestinian cinema was in form and content, it had a hard time finding its target audience. Since the late 1970s, movie theaters closed down in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip after the expansion of television networks and due to the worsening security situation imposed by the occupying regime. Not only the cinema, but also other artistic and cultural events that show the spirit of nationalism were considered provocative security activities from Israel's point of view. The main importance of Claffey's international awards was that with his success, it was the Palestinian cinema that stood on the threshold of the world gates and opened the way for an energetic new generation. The consequences of restrictions on the production and screening of Palestinian movies led to a blessing in disguise. The problem forced Palestinian filmmakers to finance their movies somewhere outside of Palestine, typically from European producers. The producers expanded the circle of the screening to return their funds. One of the most talented newcomers to the Palestinian cinema was Hani Abu Asad. Abu Asad was born in Nazareth in 1961. He went to the Netherlands in 1980 and studied there, and finally started making movies about Palestine as a producer and then a director. Hani Abu Asad finally made a name for himself by making the movie Paradise Now. The movie is about Saeed and Khalid, two childhood friends who now continue their friendship in a Palestinian resistance group. Paradise Now won the Best Foreign Language Film Award at the Golden Globe in 2006. But despite the predictions, it failed to win the Oscar for the Best Foreign Movie.
Paradise Now from the Palestinian territories, Hani Abu Asad.
Many people related it to the powerful lobby of Zionism in Hollywood.
Sotsi.
This is the first Academy Award and second consecutive nomination for South Africa, with last year's nomination for the film Yesterday.
Later on, Abu Asad condemned Israel's aggression many times, but he needed more than these interviews to display his views.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, Salamun Alaikum and welcome. This is another episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you for choosing this episode to listen to. It's about how to control thought according to Islamic point of view. But first, as usual, we'll look at the calendar. On Monday, we are here, 9th of Shaban, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 30th of the month of Bahman, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 19th of February, 2024 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is Chapter Taha, verses 124 to 125.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wa man a'rada 'an dhikri fa inna lahu ma'ishatan dankan wa nahshuruhu yawmal qiyamati a'ma.
And whoever turns away from my remembrance, indeed he will have a depressed life. And we will gather him on the day of resurrection, blind. He will say, "My Lord, why have you raised me blind while I was once seeing?"
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Some Islamic literatures indicates that leaving the path of mastership of Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, as well as leaving the duty of Hajj, have been counted as the denotation expansion of aversion of the remembrance of Allah. The purpose of straits of life is not lack of money and straitened circumstances. While many of the rich, because of greed, fear, and anxiety, live in hardship and straits. Therefore, he who has faith in Allah and is hopeful to his pure essence is safe from all these anxieties.
Everything I have, everything I own, everything I eat is thanks to you. Every breath I take, every bird I hear, every smile I see is thanks to you.
Can you remember our topic? How to control thought according to Islamic point of view. Unfortunately, we pay little attention to our thoughts and what goes on inside our mind, even though it's crucial to our well-being, productively and ultimately how we behave as Muslims. You should repulse a thought. If you do not do so, it will develop into a desire. You should therefore wage war against it. If you do not do so, it will become a resolution and firm intention.
If you do not repulse this, it will develop into a deed. If you do not make up for it by doing the opposite thereof, the opposite of that evil deed, it will become a habit. It will then be very difficult for you to give it up.
Brother Ali.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. In this very show, we are going to talk about how to ward off demonic thoughts. That is, how can we get rid of these demonic or satanic thoughts? The next factor that we need to talk about and shed some light on it is control of eyes and ears. Human memory is divided into three parts. First, sensory memory, where a person transfers phenomena and images around them to the mind through sight and hearing. If one pays attention to those images and phenomena, they enter the second part of memory, i.e., or that is, short-term memory. And if the phenomena and events in this part of the memory are encoded, those contents find their way to the third part of memory, that is the long memory, or long-term memory. Therefore, one should try to control the senses so that ugly and negative phenomena are not transferred to short-term memory, meaning after realizing that an image, phenomena or event is ugly or negative, do not pay attention to it and do not show sensitivity towards it. Indeed, an eye filled with the lines of prayers and the Quran brings forth a heart that will always remember God. And if the opposite happens, the outcome is also negative. The eighth factor that I should like to talk about is self-suggestion. What does it mean? Let's not repeat to ourselves that we have ugly thoughts, and not to allow others to implant these thoughts in our minds. We need to install this sentence on a mirror or somewhere visible so we always see it. Today, the flowers of positive thoughts have perfumed my life with their beautiful scent in the garden of my mind. I am in control of my thoughts. So these sentences are needed to be written somewhere in front of us in a daily basis to see them, to watch them, and to focus on them.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun shining with light. Be like a rose spreading its fragrance in every part.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
Seeking Allah's help through patience or sabr. To have sabr means to remain steadfast despite all odds for achieving your goals. Unfortunately, it is an often neglected stress buster that effectively puts a stop to overthinking. Verily, Allah says in the Holy Quran, in chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 45, and seek help through patience and prayer. And indeed, it is difficult except for the humbly submissive to Allah.
You're the reason my life's worth living. You're the reason I'm alive. I'd be lost without you. You're the reason that I strive. You're my destiny. You're my revenue. You're the reason that I breathe. You are all.
way to control our negative thought, it's changing our perspective. Self-talk can go a long way toward helping you change your mindset, but the way you talk to yourself matters. When addressing yourself in the first person doesn't seem to have much impact, try switching to a third-person perspective, for example. Instead of, "I feel miserable, but I've been through worse," try, "I know you feel miserable right now, but you work hard to cope with other challenges." Repositioning yourself as an outside observer helps create a space from intense thoughts and emotions. You're stepping back from mindset that's only feeling distress. Second, consciously choosing to examine situation from the third-person perspective helps you interrupt circling thoughts and explore your feelings. Sayyid Saleh al-Ghazwini.
The shaytan, so he whispers in our hearts until we commit the sin in a reasonable way. And I'm sure you've heard of the stories. When a person wants to give for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, make a donation, the shaytan comes to him with 70 reasonable reasons why he shouldn't donate. 70. So before we give a single dollar, 70 times shaytan tries to approach us. Now we can choose to finish him off right away, give, and move on. But if we sit pondering, should I really give? Then he comes with one reasonable reason. Listen, your children need the money. We're going through economical crisis. You probably need to buy a house. You need this, all sorts of things until we say, okay, let me just go home and think about this. Maybe I'll give it tomorrow. So the whispers of shaitan, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says shaitan is not a one-man operation. He has many troops. وَقُلْ رَبِّ أَعُوذُ بِكَ مِنْ هَمَزَاتِ الشَّيَاطِينَ, from the whispers of the Satans. And I seek refuge to you, O Allah, from their existence. From them to exist next to me, remain next to me, accompany me all the time. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says every time we commit one sin, a shaitan tags along. He tags along until we seek forgiveness. And until that sin is forgiven, that shaitan is going to tag along. Imagine you're walking around with about 2,000 shaitans around you. That's very evil. That's why people commit heinous sins, great sins. They're so far away from Allah because they literally don't have a split second to think for themselves. And that is why Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has opened the door for tawbah, repentance, for us to go back to Allah, to cleanse ourselves, to remove the evils, to bring the malaika to protect us versus the shayateen to surround us. So every time you recite an ayah from the Qur'an, an angel accompanies you. Every time you recite ayatul kursi, for example, 1,000 angels come to protect you against the evilness of the whispers of shaitan.
So, for this episode of today's special, we spoke about controlling our thoughts and one or two ways of killing our negative thoughts. Inshallah, we continue this interesting topic to discuss about it. And till then, we leave you in Allah's blessings. Have a nice time.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Rabbi. محمد نبي علي إمامي لفتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي, علي إمامي.
إله إلا الله الله ربي
محمد نبي علي إمامي
لا فتى إلا علي علي إمامي علي إمامي علي إمامي.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Rest of the headlines. Israel's indiscriminate air and artillery strikes kill more than 70 in central Gaza as the regime's onslaught on the besieged territory continues.